Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We're going to cover a lot of stuff this morning because a lot of stuff has happened this week. I'm going to start off with some stories, which I think you'll like. I actually have three of them for you to kick off the show. Then we're going to be talking a little bit about Obamacare because a number of you, unfortunately, are on it and you need to know what's happening with it. While the Democrats, who originated the law that's an anchor around your neck that they threw off the rowboat because they don't care, while the Democrats obstruct getting things fixed, you won't be happy with what's coming your way. And then we're going to talk, you know, if you go back to my show, I believe it was week before last, The New Civil War, you can type it in the search bar. If you have not listened to that show, may I recommend that you do? Because on full display this week was the evidence of the new civil war I talked about 2 weeks ago between the left and the right, between nationalists and constitutionalists and anarchists versus anarchists and globalists. And in that show, I talked about the fact that these people do not have allegiance to country. They have allegiance to ideology. And it is the ideology, folks, of control. And we're going to be going into some stories tonight. One about Sheriff Clark, who I think most of you are familiar with, who's running for Senate. And just some unbelievable stories about what the left is doing to his campaign, including his billboards. This is a black sheriff, right? whatever. And we're going to talk a little bit tonight about the process of impeachment. Do I think Trump's going to be impeached? No, I don't. But we are going to talk about it so you understand how it works, because I think you need to have that in your quiver of arrows of knowledge. And we're going to be talking a little bit about Dan Pence, who would, of course, be president if there was an impeachment or something else happened to Donald Trump. Or, as I surmise, Donald Trump only serves one term. He is going to be close to 71. He is just about 71, I think, in the next month or two. So, at the end of his current term, he would be 75. And, you know, I don't care how tough you are and what a fighter you are, and he is both. This thing takes its toll, particularly with a five-pronged assault from the deep state, the alt-left, the Islamists, and the media, and, yes, the Rhino Republicans, facing you, like, every day and every night. So, anyway, that's information you need to know. And then, these stories all kind of fold into where I'm going to end the show, the last segment, which is a little bit more about the thinking and the mentality of the left versus the right. You know, it goes back full circle to that new Civil War theme of the show 2 weeks ago, which I think is absolutely correct. And goes into some more detail on the platform, if you want to call it that, of the alt-left, or should we say the alt-left slash Islamist alliance. So without further ado, let us get started with some stories, shall we? First of all, sad note, Roger Ailes died. Now, Roger Ailes is the guy who dreamed up and started and did the original hiring for, we're talking about Hannity and O'Reilly, etc., Fox News. And you have probably heard bits and pieces, tributes and laments about Roger Ailes, who was removed from Fox News as its president, I think 4 or 5 months ago, because the top echelons of Fox News are changing. I did a show on this, too. You can type in the search bar Fox News, and it'll come up. But basically, Rupert Murdoch, who is a pretty firm conservative in his own way, is handing over the reins to his two sons. And they are far less conservative, and their wives are actually leftists. In fact, one of the wives worked for Hillary Clinton. So the changes that you're seeing going on at Fox News, aided and abetted, by the way, by the attacks by the alt-left, in total glee, there's more going on at Fox News than you really think. Now, Fox News is despised by those on the left and loved by those on the right. And Roger Ailes was the embodiment of the conservative leanings of Fox News up to this point. The pretext of sexual harassment and all the rest of the nonsense, in my opinion, was exactly that, a pretext. He had to go so that the, shall we say, new command, the two sons and their two leftist wives, can start altering the programming of that station, which they've already begun. But in my mind, Roger Ailes was far more than a great journalist, and he was far more than a great president of Fox News, and he was far more than a guy with foresight in terms of the market. I mean, he correctly figured that a television station, a major station, that could talk to the middle of the country, the flyover country, you know, that the coasts and the alt-lefts have forgotten, and who would present a view diametrically opposed, although balanced, I mean, you get to hear both sides, to that of the other mainstream media, would be a great success, and it has been. It's been, in fact, many nights, Fox News has more viewers than ABC, NBC, CNN, and CBS combined. That's quite a feat. In any event, Roger Ailes, I think, was a patriot. And I think if it was not for Roger Ailes and Fox News, his brainchild, I think we would have lost the Republic 10 years ago. It is only because there is a large voice out there, along with other voices. You know, there's Rush Limbaugh, and there's Sean Hannity, and there's Michael Savage. I'm going to talk a little bit about him tonight. There's many conservative voices out there. But Fox News is really the main television news, if you will, for conservatives. There is the MRTV, the MRCTV, both of which are great. Mark Levin's on one of those networks. There's The Blaze by Glenn Beck, which gives you kind of both, but primarily has a conservative or libertarian, actually, slant. Roger Ailes, had Fox News not existed, the news for most of the country would have been quite simply ABC, NBC, MSNBC, and CBS. And I think we are all aware of the dribble that these news outlets spew out. Normally, the Boston Globe, the New York Times, the Washington Post, WAPO, and several other papers come out with outrageous fake news stories. There were three of them this week alone. The television networks pick those up and promote them as gospel because they were in the papers. And the papers, of course, got them from leaks, untruthful leaks, by the deep state, the shadow government that Barack Obama set up and is thriving and in existence in the corrupt corridors of Washington, D.C. So I want to just say a tribute to Roger Ailes, whom I never met. I would have loved to. Because that man, in my opinion, has done more to preserve the Republic in terms of information, which is the key to preserving the Republic, than virtually any other person in the last decade, perhaps 20 years. Fox News began in 1996. But Roger Ailes told a story one day, several years back, and I thought it was great. And I don't have it here exact, but you'll get the gist, and I think it'll bring a smile to your face. So this leftist guy goes up in a hot air balloon, and he has a destination. He's promised his passengers to get them to point B within an hour. He quickly realizes that he has no idea where he's at. He has no idea where he's going. And he doesn't even know which direction the wind is blowing. So he gets out his trusty cell phone and he calls 911. The guy who answers the phone gets all the information from the lefty and then says, "Well, look, let me help you out because I'm tracking your phone. So you're at longitude 42 north, you know, latitude 72 west, 7 degrees, blah, blah, blah." Gives him his exact GPS coordinates. And then he tells him the wind is blowing northwest at 17 knots. And a whole bunch more details. The lefty, after getting all this information, says, "You know, you must be a Republican." The 911 responder goes, "Well, I am. What made you think so?" And the lefty says, "Well, you know, you gave me a whole bunch of facts, down to the barest detail, and I can't use any of them because I have no idea how to apply them. It doesn't matter what you told me. I don't know where I'm going. And I don't know if I'm going to make my appointment in time, if I'm going to deliver my passengers in the promised hour." The 911 responder goes, "You know, you must be a Democrat." And the guy lost in the hot air balloon goes, "Yeah, how did you know?" "Oh, that's easy. You don't know where you are. You don't know where you're going. You got elevated based on a bunch of hot air. You're moving on a promise you can't keep. You know you couldn't keep it when you made it. You don't want to use the facts to get yourself out. Now you're blaming me for your problem. And you're calling me a name." I thought that was a great little story. And so apropos. The second little story I'm going to share with you this morning is this extreme weather event that we had up here in Wyoming over the last several days. It set all sorts of records, even down to Denver. I think it was the first time they had had more than 1 inch of snow after May 17th for 42 years, something like that. I mean, pretty phenomenal. But up here at the home ranch, we got 20 inches of wet. I mean, you could wring the water out of the snow. It was so wet. It was unbelievable. There were trees that literally bowed 40 feet to the ground. It was so heavy and wet. And I've been out the last two or three days because when you get that kind of moisture suddenly, and the ditches are full, and the ponds are full, and you're getting all set up for, and you've gotten all set up for the irrigation system, you can have some major wrecks when you get a sudden onslaught of water, which is called an event. So for the last 2 days, I've been slogging around in this concrete. You can't drive anywhere, and if you could drive anywhere, you'd tear the hell out of fields. I've been slogging around this concrete three times a day. It's about a three-hour circuit, going from one head gate to another head gate, to pond, to pond, to pond, checking the levels, adjusting the water. You know, every adjustment you make upstream affects everything that's happening downstream. And you really have to know how the water system works. If you let too much water out of one pond, it's called dumping water. That's when you have so much water, what you want to do is you don't care about irrigating anymore. You just want to get the water down to the creek without it doing any damage. And when you dump water, there's all sorts of things you have to consider. For instance, the ranch road that leads from the house to the bridge across the creek crosses one of the streams, Crazy Horse. And normally it's a little stream, 6 inches wide and 6 inches deep. And now it's, in the flood last year, it was 20 feet wide and 4 feet deep. But that was an extreme event. Now it's about 3 feet deep and about 3 feet wide because I'm dumping water out of the ponds above it to try and get it down to the creek to safeguard the integrity of the pond structures and of the ditch structures, because you can blow out ditches with too much water. But you have to keep in mind that the culvert is only 16 inches wide, so there's only so much water it can take. So if you dump too much water, it's going to take out the culvert in the road, in which case yours truly can't get anywhere to bring your radio for broadcast. Wouldn't you? I know you would all just shudder. You would curl into fetal positions if you couldn't hear my voice at least once a week. You'd have to listen to the archives. So anyway, that's been the last 3 days up here. This snow is so heavy that it literally settled from 20 inches to about 6 inches in one afternoon, that was today, that the sun kind of peaked out in between, you know, those last retreating remnants of a storm, flurries flicking hither, yither, and yon, actually in this case dropping like stones hither and yither and yon since they're so wet. So far, I'm knocking on wood here as I'm broadcasting. So far, so good. The ponds seem to be in balance after many adjustments. We have emergency outfalls in some of the main ditches where we've put rock spillways below them, and we can just open them up either with a valve or by removing a canvas dam and let excess water spill out of the ditches and directly back to one of the creeks, so it takes the stress off the ditches and the pipelines. And so far, so good. Now, the real test will come in the next few days as all the snow up above us melts and a big rush of water comes tumbling down the hills at the ranch. So stay tuned next week and I'll let you know how the water wars go. How's that? But anyway, it's been an interesting experience. And particularly for, you know, May 17th, 18th, and 19th. I mean, amazing. Just amazing. Can't wait to get up to the high country, the higher country, and up to the upper ranches and see how we did up there, because whatever we got here, I flat guarantee you, there's double up there. Big difference, 3,000 feet in elevation makes. They're about 8,000. And then, the last story I'm going to share with you this morning is I had the distinct pleasure and honor of addressing the Republican Committee for Jackson County, Colorado, last Saturday. I told you a little bit about it on the show, and actually it was a short show and a rerun of the Unholy Alliance show, which is one of my favorites and the favorites of many listeners. If you didn't listen to that, that kind of ties in right with the theme of the new Civil War, and tonight's theme, which is delving more into the warped mentalities of the left. The group was relatively small, but it was great. By relatively small, I guess there was 30 or so people there. A lot of folks from around the county and folks from outside the county. all kind of high mucky mucks in the Republican Party down that way, which is the North Park part of Colorado. Beautiful country. Kind of my old stomping grounds. I fished all that country up there, Grizzly Creek and Michigan Creek and the North Platte River and Northgate Canyon, which is terrific. And, of course, I've skied many, 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 many days at Steamboat, so I've driven through there probably, 500 times. Always liked it. Sits at an elevation of about 8,000 feet, so winter's a long time going. And unlike the mountains here, which lost their snow remarkably in March, even though it was a higher than normal snowpack, very early runoff this year, other than this last storm, there's snow on all the mountains around there, the Zirkle and the Rewa, and it was quite pretty. Anyway, they had this great room rented at one of the local restaurants. There's not a whole bunch of them, but a great facility. And the Cub Scouts did the honor guard and the flag, which was terrific. And it was a great little lunch, roast beef, et cetera, et cetera. And I got to put on my little spiel, which was about the new Civil War. Kind of elaborated on that radio show of the week before for this terrific group. And I was struck. I started off my talk by asking some questions. Number one, I asked, who supported Trump? All the hands went up. And then I asked, who supported Trump but really doesn't like him as a person? And there was three or four hands that went up. And then I asked a few other questions, and, you know, the hands all went up. You know, not enthusiastically, but slowly. I mean, everybody answered. And then I asked, who here thinks Barack Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett, Ben Rhodes, and the rest of the alt-left cabal are traitorous, are treasonous? And every hand in that room shot up. I mean, not slowly, but I mean enthusiastically shot up. I thought it was quite interesting. And then I asked another question along those lines, and all the hands enthusiastically shot up. So people are quite impassioned on the right side. They're impassioned about the right things, I might add. In any event, the talk went great. The folks were terrific. It was really a microcosm of flyover America, the America that the coasts don't care about, that the alt-left hates, that progressives despise, the bitter clingers, the Bubbas, you know, the irredeemable deplorables. And it struck me looking around the room that most of the room was aging. Oh, there were maybe 5, 6, 7 of the group that I would say were 40s down to maybe 20s, which was great to see. A couple of teenagers there. The Republican chairwoman for the county has two daughters who are teenagers. They were both there. It was great to see the younger set. But I talked to the group about this because, you know, the folks on the right are aging because the progressives have been so successful in their mission that they started 40 years ago to take over the educational system, the media system, the information systems, and to indoctrinate the younger generation, really based on a bunch of contrived, I'm being kind but when I say contrived, principles of the alt-left. The left has been very, very, very successful in this. And there was an educator in the audience who agreed with my thoughts, shall we say, on how successful the left has been in taking over the educational system. But the moral of the story is that in a little town, in a small county, in the middle of nowhere, in the Rockies, there exists a group which is representative of the 65 million of us around this country. And in my opinion, the number's closer to 85 million. I think Donald Trump lost 20 million votes from people who just couldn't pull the lever for him, even though they agree with his policies. I don't think they voted, or they wrote in, or they voted for a libertarian. I don't know. It was quite an insightful experience. And it brought home to me again how in tune, how knowledgeable flyover country is about reality. And it cemented my thought that the Republicans, if they don't eat their young, you know, McCain and Graham and Collins, I mean, make me gag, and some of the folks over there in the House, if they don't eat their young, i.e. form a circular firing squad, have a terrific chance to hold the House, maybe pick up some seats, and to pick up seats in the Senate in 2018. But boy, they really got to get it together. And they really got to start the fight. And they really got to stop knuckling under to the losers. You know, the folks who lost the election. So, thank you very much to the town of Walden and Jackson County for the hospitality last Saturday. By the way, a lot of people bought books, which was great. And I hope all of you who are listening to the show, and I think that's now most of that group, are enjoying turning the pages. Okay. Those are my stories. My stories. Now we're going to get into, and I didn't mention this in the run-up to the show, in my listing of the topics, listing of the segments, but we're going to talk just a little bit about the Comey deal, Comey getting fired, and the special counsel being appointed. And listen, you've heard a lot of this stuff, so I'm not going to repeat that. It's not what I do. It's not my job. It's not my mission for you. Let me tell you some things, let me give you some things to think about relative to all this. Number one, I told you, several weeks ago, that Comey was out for Comey. I don't think he's a lefty. I don't think he's a righty. He is a James Comey guy. You could tell by his testimony there in front of the Senate a few weeks ago. And now you can tell absolutely by his refusal to testify again to Congress unless it's an open and publicly televised confessional, shall we say. I think that just kind of proves my point. Because I don't know what former FBI director who would not do this briefing behind closed doors other than James Comey. I also want to remind you that on May 3rd, actually, let's skip forward. Supposedly, Comey kept contemporaneous notes, handwritten notes, of meetings he had with various people, including Trump. Now, one of the things we all know about handwritten notes, you can write them anytime you wish. And you can say you wrote them 3 minutes after the meeting, and nobody will, of course, ever be the wiser. Then it's a he said, she said deal. Now, suddenly this memo, once again another leak, I think it was to the New York Times this time, this memo seems to indicate that there was some meeting at the White House, and Trump asked everybody to leave, and he asked Comey to stay, And then he said, you know, Michael Flynn's a really good guy. Can you see your way clear to, you know, getting rid of this crap that he's embroiled in? Now, that was a week ago. The leak, that is. That was this week. However, the meeting at the White House was supposedly in April, the contemporaneous quote-unquote notes of then-Director Comey, ex-Director Comey now. On May 3rd, here's what's interesting. On May 3rd, Director Comey testified under oath, quote, "There has been no attempt to undermine any investigation," unquote. That was his testimony to Congress, quote, unquote. McCabe, his temporary replacement and a staunch Democrat. I mean, his wife, you know, I've talked about this on the show, how she got $700,000 from the Democratic National Committee to run for her congressional seat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, McCabe ain't no righty. McCabe testified to Congress, and I quote, "There has been no attempt to undermine any investigation," unquote. That was just a week ago. So we seem to have some, kind of a fake parallel universe going on. We have Director Comey's notes of a meeting in April where supposedly Donald Trump held him to the side after everybody else left and did not request, did not demand, and did not order, but kind of insinuated that Flynn was a good guy and a patriot and, you know, what the hell is going on here. And then we have testimony by then-Director Comey, now ex-director, and acting director McCabe subsequent to those supposed notes under oath that there's been no attempt to undermine any investigation. I will leave all this for you folks to kind of think about. But could this be the deep state, the shadow government in play? And what role did ex-director Comey play in the shadow government and the deep state? I think he was in it up to his eyeballs. Not for right, not for left, but for himself. And I think he still is. Now, I'm going to reserve my judgment, my final judgment on Comey, until I listen to his testimony upcoming in Congress, I think it's next week, that he insisted be public and televised. Because I'm really interested to see what other kind of incongruities there may be in his testimony then versus his testimony previously. Because, you know, it's been my experience that when you're dealing with the deep state, that incongruities only seem to grow. They never kind of disappear. They're never explained away. So, we shall see. The other story, news, that I'm going to talk about tonight, this morning, you know, when it's dark out, you get confused, particularly when you've been running on a little sleep and slogging through 20 inches of concrete. Seth Richards. Now, those of you who listen to Sean Hannity have heard him talking about it. Back before the election, this is, September, October. I had this. You type in the search bar, Seth Richards, or DNC employee, or murder. I talked about the fact that this 27-year-old DNC staffer had been shot at 3 in the morning in the back twice. The Washington, D.C. police, gee, I wonder who they answer to, had ruled it a robbery, but all the money was in his wallet, number one. Number two, nobody had taken his watch. He had all his jewelry, his watch. Nobody had taken anything. But it was a robbery. Shot twice in the back. It's now come out that he was alive, according to the surgeon at the hospital that he was brought to. He was alive and likely would have lived when he got to the hospital. Now, I don't have any information yet on the blanks, fill in the blanks, as to why he mysteriously died at the hospital, even though the admitting surgeon thought that he was going to make it. And of course, the act itself, point blank, twice in the back, no robbery, leads one to suspect, should we say, foul play. When you couple that with what Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are capable of, with the extreme coincidences of 47 people being killed, murdered, died, 8 of them in plane accidents, 8 of 47 in plane accidents. Think about that for a while. I mean, what are the odds of that? And these 47 people were all confidants or friends or knew a lot or were somehow involved in the Whitewater and other Clinton scandals over the years. Most of those murders, deaths, incredibly coincidental passings, shall we say, happened in the 80s and early 90s. But if you take that dot, and then you put the dot in of WikiLeaks, you know, Richards was killed, I believe it was June 12th. Yeah, it was June 12th, 2016. 12 days later, WikiLeaks releases the emails from the DNC National Committee. 12 days later. About a week after that, Julian Assange does an interview with Sean Hannity. Hannity actually flew over there to interview him. It was a good interview. And Assange insisted, number one, he did not get the information from Russia. Number two, that he did not get the information from any state actor. And number three, that the people who gave him information like this were always in extreme risk, which is why he never divulged his source. Ever. Let's add another dot to that. About 10 days later, give or take, Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, offers a $20,000 reward for any information leading to who pulled the trigger in the Seth Richards shooting. You should really listen to that interview between Hannity and Assange to get all the nuance. I'm just kind of brushing over it. But if you take all these dots, the unfortunate, untimely, and highly coincidental and weird deaths of folks close to the Clintons. And by the way, listen to my shows on this. I did 3 shows. Type in Clinton murders, or you could type in 47, Clinton 47, it'll probably come up. Listen to those 3 shows. This was, back last year, I think, before the election. I mean, it's been on my radar for quite a while. And if you listen to the new Civil War show last week, and you listen to the week before last, and you listen to the last segment of this show, which is upcoming, on the alt-left and their agenda, and if you believe that the alt-left has no allegiance to country, has only allegiance to ideology, and you take all these dots I just gave you, I think it's pretty damn clear Seth Richards was murdered. He was not murdered by a thief. He was murdered by someone else who knew where he was going to be. And if the other reports, that is, he arrived at the hospital after being shot with every chance of surviving, but mysteriously did not emerge from the hospital alive, if you add that dot, then I think you have pretty much a conclusive series of dots that you can easily connect with a single dreadfully black line. I bring up that story not only because it needs to be brought up again, but I bring up that story because it is indicative of the disregard the alt-left has for life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the security of you and your family. Or for that matter, the security and stability of the United States, and particularly the United States Constitution. Let's go to the next quick story. Michael Savage, big radio talk show host, very good, started harping this week on new facts, and I have not researched all the new facts yet, which point to Justice Antonin Scalia being murdered. Not peacefully dying of old age in his sleep on his hunting trip. Now, I did a whole show on this, which many lauded. I mean, I got a lot of comments from a lot of other media people, too. It's probably the most concise show connecting the dots to show that this Justice of the United States Supreme Court was, in fact, murdered. That it was foul play. You know, the coroner never saw the body. The family wouldn't allow an autopsy. The guy who owned the hunting camp in a remote part of Texas was a big Obama supporter and donated, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to Obama and Democratic causes. Scalia at that time was the single human being that could stand in the way of what Obama wanted to implement in his last 12 months in office, and on and on and on. Listen to that show. Just type in, you know, Justice Scalia or Scalia murder, and I believe it'll come up for you. But it's very interesting that at the same time this Seth Richards thing is rebubbling to the surface, so is the Antonin Scalia thing. Now, remember that Barry Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Hillary Clinton didn't give a hoot about four people who died in Benghazi. In fact, they lied through their teeth. And bear in mind that same crew has allowed 500,000 men, women, and children to be killed in the Mideast. A refugee crisis of more than 6 million. And hundreds of thousands of Christians and Yazidis murdered. Genocide is the only way to describe it. With tens of thousands of those women, you know, those women that they're so concerned about, being enslaved, becoming sexual slaves to ISIS. And if you think that these people have compassion for human life, then I think you're kind of crazy. And anybody who has no compassion for human life is capable of taking it, or shall we say, overseeing it being taken. I'll leave you with that food for thought on those two dark and sinister matters, because it flows right into the new civil war and how I'm ending the show, which is social justice as the battle cry of the left. Now, another indication of the mentality of the alt-left. So, Sheriff Clark, you know, he's that black sheriff who's often on the news. You've seen him on Fox News. You've heard him on lots of radio shows. He's a tough guy. And he's right, right, right. Red, red, red. Actually, he's black, black, black. But his heart is red. And he put up in Milwaukee, which is a sanctuary city, important to remember. He put up billboards, or actually one of his campaign packs, whatever, put up billboards. The billboard was very simple. It was like his picture, and it says, "He protects citizens, not alien criminals." You know, you'd think that was kind of not objectionable, don't you think? Not only that, it happens to be First Amendment stuff. Well, this outfit, which materialized kind of suddenly, called the Hispanic News Network, attacked these billboards, called him an alt. This is, I'm not making this up. Remember, he's black, an alt-right white nationalist, and called the billboards a hate and racist outdoor ad. You know, I guess in their countries, it's hateful and it's racist if you support a black sheriff when he's trying to keep convicted criminals off the streets. I mean, who knew? Anyway, these activists, quote-unquote, contacted the billboard company, said they were going to boycott illegal aliens. We're going to boycott all the billboard advertising. I mean, like, what? Say what? The billboard company, regrettably, calls the campaign of Sheriff Clark and says, "Listen, we either have to take these billboards down or you need to change the wording." And Sheriff Clark's campaign, much to his credit, said, not only no, but hell no, we're not changing anything. In the end, the billboard company backed down, the billboards are up to the extent they're not defaced, but I think it's instructive, once again, in the thought process of the alt-left and their willingness to trample on First Amendment rights, not to mention life, limb, and the pursuit of happiness. Then, also on Sheriff Clark's campaign, he came out with a saying. Yeah, here we go. So, he talked at length about the fact that mayors and other officials of sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, sanctuary states should be prosecuted. And he brought up the fact that the illegal aliens and criminals that these guys are harboring, knowingly breaking the law. I mean, knowingly breaking federal law. All these illegal aliens, illegal alien criminals, etc., are being supported by your tax dollars. Except they're not really your tax dollars, they're your grandchildren's tax dollars, since all our tax dollars have long ago been spent and we're $20 trillion in debt, which we're going to pass on to our successive generations. Great. Boy, they're going to like us, aren't they? Clark enrolled his sheriff's department in a Homeland Security program, which trains his deputies to spot and catch criminal illegal aliens and hold them for ICE. That also brought a huge response from the alt-left. Latino activists, I mean, we're talking about thousands of them, have twice marched on his office, waving Mexican and Central American flags and slogans in Spanish, not English. And in the last week, as Sheriff Clark points out, there was this criminal illegal alien. His name was Constantino Banda Acosta. He had no driver's license. He had previously been charged with domestic violence. He had previously been charged with DUI. He got liquored up and crashed his pickup into a family returning from Disneyland, and then ditched the truck and fled the scene. He was later apprehended. The six-year-old son of that family died in that crash. Sheriff Clark has been accused of being racist for bringing up that deal. Now, that brings us to this incredible alt-left attack. I mean, from the five combat battalions that I referenced at the beginning of the show. Rhino Republicans, the alt-left Islamists, the media, against Donald Trump. Now, I think he's going to survive this, because I don't think there's any there. This Russian collusion thing, the real folks that colluded with the Russians, and I've done shows on this too, is Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. All you have to do is watch that hot mic moment of Barack Obama patting the Russian president's leg at the end of an interview, saying, tell Vlad, literally, tell Vlad, I'll have more flexibility after this election. This is right before his 2012 re-election, because it's my last election. And then you have the Uranium One deal where we sold the uranium that Hillary signed off on, and I've talked about all this stuff. The pay-to-play. We have John Podesta, the former DNC chairman, getting paid millions of dollars by Russia as I do this show for quote-unquote consulting. But one of the things you need to know, because the alt-left would dearly like to impeach Trump, lock him up, whatever, okay? And it's not about Trump, folks. It's about Trump's agenda, which is the dismantling of their agenda. Here's how impeachment works. Broad brush, simplest terms. The House has to vote to impeach by majority. The impeachment vote by the House then goes to the Senate, and they have to vote to convict by majority. And then you have an impeachment. For those of you who are of the right age, think back to the Bill Clinton mess. Now, let's assume under the worst conditions an impeachment occurs, Trump is no longer president, or listen, you know, anything happens, Trump is no longer president. Dan Pence would take over. Now listen, the alt-left, Dan Pence is a choir boy. In fact, Dan Pence is an archangel compared to Trump. You know, he's a traditional Republican, free trader, pro-business, budget-cutting governor, tax cutter, social conservative, you know, abortion, gays and education, etc., etc. All hot buttons for the left. He has vast experience on Capitol Hill, unlike Trump. The irony of all this, and I think Trump will get it done. I think he'll survive and get his agenda done. But the irony of all this is the left better be careful. I'm going to talk about this in just a moment. The left better be careful. You know, sometimes you don't want to get what you ask for. Because I think Pence, in many ways, would be smoother, more adept, and far more expedient in getting Trump's agenda passed with a decidedly right-hand turn on parts of the agenda. You know, wouldn't that be poetic justice? And in lines with all this kind of train of thought, so to speak, we have a special prosecutor that's been appointed by Rosenstein. By the way, I called him Rosencrantz in the last show. Sorry about that. By Rosenstein, the deputy AG. Anyway, the special prosecutor, as you know, is a former FBI director, Bob Mueller. Supposedly, he is friends with Comey. I don't know. I have not been able to find any substantiation of that. Bob Mueller's record is pretty impeccable. But on the other hand, up to the time Comey went off the deep end, his record was pretty impeccable. Personally, this is my personal opinion. I have nothing to base this on other than gut instinct. Let me be clear. I'm just a poor old hayseed in Wyoming speculating. I think that what the Democrats and the media have been doing is kind of death by a thousand paper cuts. The leaks, the deep state stuff, the whole nine yards. And I think Jeff Sessions and Rosenfeld and Trump and who knows who else got together and said, you know, this is going to continue forever. So why don't we appoint a special counsel to look into the so-called Russian collusion deal, get that taken care of and off the plate so these people have nothing more to talk about, and while he's in there, he can take a look at this, at the leaks, the unmasking, the Clinton Foundation, a whole host of other stuff. It was interesting when they had the announcement, when the Justice Department made the announcement, they said, to look into the claims, this is, I'm paraphrasing now, not a quote, to look into the claims of the Russia-Trump campaign collusion and all other matters. Remember those words, all other matters. So I think there might be a jujitsu move going on, you know? Where you use the force of the enemy against them. And I think, I'm forecasting right now, that unless something comes up that's really black, evil, and proven, not made up fake news, that I'm not anticipating, I think the end result of this special counsel is going to be really bad news for Barack Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett, Ben Rhodes, leakers high and low throughout the government, whoever unmasked Flynn and others illegally, and maybe, you know, a person like Flynn who was part of the Trump team. But I don't think it's going to get to Trump or any of his very top people. But I think it is going to get to some of the alt-left. It's going to be interesting, that's for sure. That kind of brings us to the last segment, which is a kind of a continuation of that theme of the new Civil War, alt-left versus right. So, you know, they love the word social justice. It's the battle cry of the alt-left. And what it really is, folks, is fascism. They use the word fascist, and as I've said many times on this show, they don't have a clue. All they do is show their ignorance when they use that word. Fascism is a product of the left. Authoritarian totalitarianism is a product of the right. Genghis Khan was a totalitarian. Mao Tse-Tung was a fascist. Mussolini was a fascist. Hitler, National Democratic Socialist Party, was a fascist. The fascism is the left, not the right. And social justice is what they use in terms of the term that they use to cloak their fascism, in addition to calling everybody else fascist. You know, they love to do that. And this is really Obama's army of black shirts. These are the groups that have been organized by his 250 Organizing for America offices, which suddenly sprang up within weeks of him leaving office. I mean, how long have that been planned? Look, when you see the black hoodies on the college campuses, when you see conservative speakers being assaulted, and professors who were trying to protect them being assaulted. When you see that stuff happening, when matters of news that I went over tonight, just as a few examples, Scalia, Seth Richards, Comey, special counsel, blah, blah, blah. When you see all these things cropping up, this is a manifestation of fascism. Now, I think a couple of things are going to be turned on their head on these folks, but that remains to be seen. You know, Democrats first got this when they were old Democrats. They were corrupt, but they were Democrats, not progressives, which is what that party is now. They got a clue to doing this in the 1930s. That's when they began their propaganda campaign to try and lead people into believing they're the party of the little guy and the Republicans are the party of the rich. And they've been successful in kind of making that image stick. I mean, Mitt Romney got hurt by his 47% remark. Perfect example. Then in the 1950s, our buddy Saul Alinsky, Handbook for Radicals, he came along and he kind of taught them how to subvert elected government so you could install your ideological government. I talked about 2 weeks ago in the new Civil War about how every time the Democrats have had their butts kicked in elections, and they've been getting their butts kicked. We're not talking about president now. They've been getting their butts kicked at the local, state, county levels for 20 years. 1,000-plus seats lost. That's because middle America, the folks that I talked to last Saturday, as a representative sample, don't believe in any of this crap, don't trust any of this crap, and have common sense, which they employ when they're given information, to assimilate the information, connect the dots, and come up with a conclusion. And the conclusion is the exact opposite of the alt-left mainstream media, the deep state, and the other clowns out there who are all about anti-America, anti-Constitution. However, folks, the alt-left is alive and well, as you can see by the daily onslaught of the news and a host of other factors, and aided and abetted by Republican rhinos, and indirectly, I think unintentionally, aided and abetted by weak-kneed Republicans who cut and run at the first sign of a dispute, at the first sign of a tempest. I mean, there are a bunch of Republicans out there, folks, who just don't know how to stand and fight. They just don't. I mean, they're more concerned with their country club than who knows what. Anyway, while Saul Alinsky was retraining, should we say, the Democrats in the 1950s, the Republicans were kind of forgetting the teachings of Machiavelli, which is never wound a prince. In other words, every time the Republicans got to a place where they could put the screws on this ever-burgeoning progressive movement, they did not. They talked about consensus and reaching across the aisle and la-di-da-di-da, let's all live and love together. Nonsense. Okay? And we can't let it happen this time. I mean, we have the reins of government. We need to slap those reins, dig in the spurs, and get the horse of conservatism, the pony of the Constitution, the beast of freedom, into the corral where it's safe once and for all. This is not the time for Mr. Nice Guy. The folks we're fighting are not Mr. Nice Guys. They will do anything, including, in my opinion, murder, of a 27-year-old DNC staffer, scores of other people throughout the years, and a Supreme Court justice to achieve their ends. They will allow 500,000 people to perish in a far-off land, and 6 million people, most of them, not all of them, truly terrified refugees, despite their adherence to Sharia law, to be uprooted and moved from their homes to destabilize an entire continent, which I think is actually part of the plan. That's a whole other story. If you take modern social media and the modern psychology to successfully instill propaganda in people's minds, the alt-left has unlocked the recipe, shall we call it, of how to impose a totalitarian regime on an unsuspecting population, or shall we say, a deliberately misled, a deliberately beguiled, a deliberately led astray population, because they are furnished incomplete and incorrect information. The lefties and the righties have different opposing views of life and country. The folks on the right and folks like them establish the Constitution, believe in the Constitution. They believe in Judeo-Christian principles, or most of them do, and morals. It is the folks on the right, much more so than the folks on the left, who fought and bled the last 230 years of this nation's history to keep their children free. Folks on the right believe in individual freedoms, an individual determination, an individual opportunity. Folks on the left believe in the power of the ruler over the rabble. There's a big, big, big difference. The alt-left, make no mistake about this, to achieve their ideological ends, because that's what they believe in. Their flag is their ideology. It is not the stars and stripes. They really want to turn a constitutional republic into a totalitarian dictatorship, a fascist regime, with a quote-unquote king rather than an elected president, or a president who is elected by fraud who then establishes himself as a quote-unquote king. I mean, they really believe that folks are not capable of living without government and government ordering their lives. A lot of this success has come from the ongoing deterioration in the education system, which has been purposely corrupted and brilliantly corrupted by lefties. Lefties think that economy and taxes are a zero-sum scheme. In other words, us folks on the right, conservatives, we believe everybody is equal opportunity. A rising tide lifts all boats. The better the economy is doing, the more tax revenue will flow to the treasury, the more opportunity there is for all individuals of any creed, color, nationality, it doesn't matter, and the better everybody does. In other words, there doesn't have to be a loser for there to be a winner. It can be winners. The left, on the other hand, this is really important, they believe it's all a zero-sum game. They really believe, or they've convinced themselves they believe, that you cannot get rich unless somebody else gets poor. Therefore, you need government to take and redistribute the wealth to keep everybody equal. Back to that control theory. Nobody becomes rich in their mind without somebody else becoming poor. And the richer people get, the more people become poor. They believe this with their heart and soul. Or at least they believe this with the heart and soul of their politics. How's that? The left and the right do not, and I talked about this the week before last, do not work toward common goals at all. The right believes in allowing people divergent paths to accomplish goals. The left believes there is no divergent path. In fact, the left believes that everybody on the right should be destroyed. The left works for prosperity for themselves, but believe that people on the right are unworthy. Do you know how many times the left has brought up the story of Robin Hood in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years? Google it up. Hundreds of times. It's one of their talking points. Robin Hood. And once again, they espouse a false flag, a false theory. Because Robin Hood, folks, is not a guy who stole from the rich and gave to the poor, which they kind of use to justify their own thievery, I might add. Robin, baby, if you go back in the history books, and it's all written out there, this is not surmise, Robin stole from the oppressive government of Prince John. And what he stole was the money that Prince John had taxed away from the poor. So, Robin, baby, actually stole from the government to give back to the people. He did not steal from the rich to give to the poor. There is a really big difference. Think about it. All right. I guess the last points I want to make on this, here's what the alt-left believes they need to get done to impose their ideology. Understand that everything they do is empirical. It is a stepping stone to the next stone until finally they have a wall of stones around all other people. In this way, by the way, this is one of the links between the alt-left and radical Islam. Radical Islam believes much the same way, except on a theological basis. Barry Obama basically took the teachings of Saul Alinsky and the methods and operations of Muhammad, who is probably one of the world's foremost totalitarians. Sharia law, etc., etc. Once again, I had the Unholy Alliance show up last week as a rerun. You should listen to it. I'm not going to go into great detail here, but trust me, it's true. The right stands for liberty. The left stands for slavery. And I don't mean subjective slavery. I mean slavery. The slavery of control. The slavery of taxation. Remember that the left, the quote-unquote Democratic Party, has always been for slavery. They fought a civil war in the 1860s to keep slavery, something that they forget now as they try and gin up division, tribal politics amongst different races and groups in the United States. So the Democrats have never strayed much from their core beliefs, which is some people are made to be masters and all other people are made to be mastered. It's absolutely the antithesis to the concepts of the Constitution, and it is 180 degrees polar opposite from what conservatives believe and practice. And to implement that ideology, the left needs to silence free speech. It needs to attack the pillars of American values, the Constitution, faith, and family. It needs to divert, distract, and control people with global warming, climate change scam, because it gives them effective control of about everything you do, breathe, say, transport, you name it. They need to continue the rampant illegal immigration into the United States, and a place for all these future voters, lefty voters, to be safe in the meantime, i.e. sanctuary cities. They need to control health care. I have told you on this show many times that one of the first steps a truly fascist government, that is a totalitarian government of the left, takes is to try and control health care. I mean, look at it this way. If a government controls your food, controls your water, controls the money you have, and controls whether you live or die, whether you're sick or healthy, whether you're happy or you're not, they kind of control you, don't you think? And they have to disarm the 150 million Americans who have weapons. Take a look at what's happening in Venezuela right now. Those poor people are getting slaughtered because weapons haven't been allowed in Venezuela since the socialists took over 10 years ago. So the only people who have the guns is the fascist government, their police, and their troops. Trust me, the alt-left in America would like you and me and the other 80 million of us to be in the same exact predicament as those poor people in Venezuela are in right now. Trust me, they would like that. I have often said that the 150 million armed Americans are not only the last bulwark between the Constitution and the loss of freedom, between a constitutional republic and a fascist leftist regime, but they are the last bulwark to freedom on the planet. Which is why the UN is as desperate as the alt-left to rid America of guns. You know, they'd rather us be sheep led to the slaughter. The other thing that these people need to do is socialism. Socialism. They need to be able to take wealth from some to distribute wealth to others. And a huge emphasis on distributing wealth to others who are going to vote for them. It's kind of like how they take our money to run their campaigns to subject us to loss of freedoms. I mean, it is ridiculous. Islam. Basically, Islam promotes submission through terrorism and teaching appeasement. They indoctrinate people, radical Islamists do. But remember that, folks, that Islam is not a religion. It is a theocratic form of government. And all people under that form of government are oppressed under what's called Sharia law. And non-Muslims, that would be the 80 million of us or so, irredeemable deplorables, or most of us. I'm sure there's Muslims in with us too, and rah-rah for that. But non-Muslims are third-class citizens subject to even greater oppression. Just like on the left, righties like Sheriff Clark, even though he's black, are subject to greater oppression than just being a mere, you know, white trash, irredeemable, deplorable, bubba, bitter clinger righty. I mean, that's bad enough. But to be all those things in black and to go against the credo of the left, oh, unheard of. Look at what they've done with Tim Scott, the senator out of the Carolinas. Look at what they did to Clarence Thomas, the black justice on the Supreme Court. I mean, I can go on and on. There's a zillion examples. Now, the last thing I'm going to do, because I got a little out of sequence here, is tell you a bit about Obamacare, because I know a number of you are on it. I just talked to somebody. I gave you a story, I believe, last week or the week before about one person I know who's having a nightmare. A nightmare dealing with Obamacare in a simple procedure for their son. Anyway, Virginia and Maryland have just reported early price increases from 10 to 50%. I mean, this is early in the year. Aetna and Humana are dropping out of markets. 40% right now. Today, 40% of the U.S. counties, that's the counties in the United States, have only one insurer selling coverage. Now, folks, if you only have one person you can buy something from that you really need, what's going to happen to the price? Oh, yes, it's going to go up. The median coverage price this year for a typical plan was about 67% higher in marketplaces with only one insurer as compared to marketplaces with multiple insurers. That was a study done, by the way, by the nonprofit Urban Institute, who is pretty apolitical. The uncertainty that's being created with the repeal and replace of Obamacare, that uncertainty created by the Democrats themselves because of their refusal to deal with the Republicans on it to fix their own mess. Remember the story of the balloon here at the beginning of the show? Right. Perfect. A gal by the name of Catherine Hempstead, a senior advisor, she's with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, says, quote, "Everything might be worse everywhere," unquote. Aetna, the third largest insurer in the country, by the way, says that it will completely leave the exchanges in 2018 after losing $200 million this year. That one insurer, by the way, covered and or covers and is about to not cover 800,000 people. Humana said it was abandoning selling coverage in a number of areas, but that also left 16 Tennessee counties with no insurer. None. Zero. The same thing that's happening in Iowa. There's been a few insurers that have mildly, modestly expanded. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee said it would serve those 16 counties that were abandoned. But that's the exception rather than the rule. Eight states, are down to one insurer. Alaska, Alabama, Delaware, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and yes, my state, Wyoming. Iowa is soon to be there. 96 counties will have limited or no choices this year. So, that's what's happening with Obamacare. Tie that into the steps that the alt-left must take to implement their ideology, and I think you can see a pattern. And make no mistake about this. I'm going to wrap this up. Make no mistake about this, folks. The left is out of the closet. They will resort to any and all means, let me repeat that, any and all means, no holds barred, from murder to riots to destruction of private property to breaking federal laws to illegally interfering with duly elected representatives, people that you and I elected, in the carryings on of their jobs and their agendas. and in the fulfillment of their ideological dream. There is nothing they won't do. And the faster that we conservatives understand that, gird ourselves for it, and fight that fight, the faster we can put this to bed. And it needs to go for a long, long sleep. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You have a good week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.